The importance largely stems from a couple of perspectives. So I think one, you mentioned the idea of prevention. So we could take the medical condition of hypertension. So if someone goes to a primary care provider, has undiagnosed hypertension, which is often asymptomatic, and gets treated then, or engages in lifestyle modification and eradicates the hypertension, that will ultimately, in my opinion, benefit both the patient. So I think in terms of prevention, the benefits to the patient are enormous. And then the downstream benefits to the health system in terms of reduction of the consequences of sustained hypertension, like myocardial infarction, heart attack, stroke, all those things. So I think you hit the nail on the head with, I think the major issue is prevention and education that primary care providers provide to patients and provide to the overall system. I think that the second thing is that I would say the vast majority of us engage in what we call high-value cost-conscious care. So we want to provide the best care to individual patients and do it in a financially responsible way, and I mean that both to the system as well as to the patient, to consider what we're giving the patients, what they can afford, what makes sense, what's the best evidence for the condition they have. So we are not people who order tests in any way willy-nilly. We tend to really think about what we're doing, and in that way, again, I think both save the patient as well as the system dollars. I also think, because specialty care is so much more expensive, when someone comes to the primary care provider, there are many things we can handle all on our own. And I think, I hate to use the phrase, but as the gatekeeper, we can then decide who needs to be moved on to that higher specialty care. I think in terms of continuity and connectedness to patients, I think that's what also is the true value. You were mentioning your own doctor. The true value of the primary care provider is that longevity, the continuity with the patients, knowing them, their family members. How can we actually get somebody to engage in lifestyle modification and disease modification reduction? And I think we do that over time, which I think is incredibly valuable to the health of the community. So I'm the head of the primary care residency program here, and when I'm talking about our shared values and interests of all of the students who match in our program, it's interesting because I'll often say we want to be the doctor, the social worker, and the psychologist, because most of us fully and utterly enjoy that connection, that ability to just sit and talk to try to help someone engage in, again, whether it be around lifestyle modification, or it be around stress in their lives, stress at work, stress at home. I think we all enjoy that level of connectedness and trying to make a difference in the lives of our patients.
And it seems evident too that a primary care person who has been in a community for a while knows other specialties, subspecialty doctors. So if something comes up, you would know where to head or direct your patient.
So I can even see it from my own actual practice, having been here for 25 years, in comparison to, so right now I'm also the interim division director for general internal medicine, so I'm hiring primary care providers to join us, and many of them are the graduates of my training program.
To join you?
In practice. So I
do
work,
you have a private practice?
I do.
Okay.
So I'm part of Brown Medicine Academic Practice, which
is part of
Brown Medicine and Brown Physicians Incorporated. Yeah. It is extraordinarily valuable to be connected in your community with the subspecialists that are incredibly important. You will absolutely need them to help care for your patients, but that idea of knowing who to call is incredibly important. I also think that saves a lot of dollars for patients. I can often troubleshoot this. I think this is another value of the primary care provider. that we can troubleshoot a situation, and really not all things need to go to the specialist, but rather I can ask a quick question, how do I make this happen, what do you think I should do as the next test, and I can save the patient a visit and their time down the road by just getting a quick quick consult or quick communication with our subspecialist. I just did it yesterday with an endocrinologist, and she helped me figure out what to order. Now the patient doesn't need to go to see the specialist. They're busy enough too. They're more than willing to be helpful. But yes, the connectedness to all of the physicians in the community is really important.
Now, you run the residency program. Is there a demand for slots in your program?
What do you mean? So I have 10 spots per year. We interview applicants.
And that's the Warren Alpert.
It is. It's the
residency program.
General Internal Medicine Residency Program at Rhode Island Hospital at the Warren Alpert Medical School.
Okay.
It's that whole long thing.
Okay, so you have 10 slots.
10 slots per year,
yeah.
And we are recruiting from all across the country. We also have a connection. So about 3 to 4 years ago, the medical school created a primary care and population health track. They take, I'm not positive, between like 12 and 15 students that match right into primary care and population health, and this is distinct from the rest of the medical school.
Okay.
The medical school population, they're intermingled, but they have a separate separate curriculum. So we have a connection to them as well. We have agreed, we would love to keep the students who match into that medical school class. We would love to have them stay here in primary care, in any of the primary care disciplines, general internal medicine, pediatrics, family medicine. We have an agreement to try to retain our best and people who might stay for the future.
So your 10 slots, mm-hmm. Do you fill them every year? Or
we are extremely fortunate that we have actually filled them every single year. We have one of the oldest primary care programs in the country. It began in 1979, and we've had the excellent fortune of being able to fill. We also have, which is not true at all residency programs across the country, the vast majority of our residents stay within primary care disciplines. There are many places across the country that are primary care programs, but almost all of the residents subspecialty match after. So in my
okay.
group, and because that's a choice that everybody can make once they get here, but of my group of 10, some years I'll have as low as like 6 will stay in primary care, and then other years up to 10, but usually I have between 60 and 100% will stay within some element of primary care.
So what do you hear from these young people? What appeals to them about primary care? You know, again, you go to medical school, most people come out with bills. What do they tell you is the appeal?
Yeah, almost universally what folks are driven to from the student perspective is caring for vulnerable populations.
And those would be?
In some ways, so it's interesting, from a student's perspective, they'd like to care for minority populations, those who have socioeconomic issues, racial and ethnic minorities. So a lot of them come with, that's part of their drive, is they want to care for the underserved. I would argue that when you are in primary care practice, you are even in our community, caring for the full gamut. So there will be people who are socioeconomically much better off than others. But many come sort of driven to think that that's what they may do with their lives. So I think it's largely about the patients they're going to get to serve.
Mm-hmm.
That idea that we've been talking about, that connectedness and the ability or desire to be much more than just the physician, to be the counselor, to be someone who helps them navigate through life. Additionally, I think the idea of prevention and high-value care. So I think almost all the things we were talking about at the beginning are the things that continue to motivate them to enter primary care, for sure.
So talk about the pay.
As physicians, we clearly are in a privileged position by being in, you know, top 5 or 10%. Even the lowest paid amongst us are going to be doing better than the vast majority of Americans.
You're talking economically.
Economically.
Yes.
And so that always fills me personally with gratitude. You know what I mean? I just feel thankful to have this job every day. Neither of my parents went to college. No one went to college in my family.
Wow.
Except for myself.
Good for you.
And so I feel privileged every day. The prestige or value of primary care really starts at the level of our government, to a large extent, who values it and who doesn't. And I do think with the last administration, that was a real effort. And so we actually saw an uptick in the number of people applying in primary care disciplines. So I think it's the level of the government. I think it's actually institution specific. So students can be at places across the country that highly value primary care or totally devalue primary care. And that also helps push them in one direction or another. And then primary care can either be valued in our community or not. And so I think it's multi-leveled about sort of the prestige around being a primary care provider. So the finances. So we all recognize that it is more than a lot of other people are fortunate to make. But the students coming out now have far more debt because school is far more expensive. So unless they manage to get sort of need-based admissions, which most private medical schools do not have, they will come out with, you know, most people between $150,000 and maybe $300,000 worth of debt.
Wow.
And so when they're, even though in a primary care job they might ultimately be able to pay that off, the pressure is to think about going into a discipline that would enable them to have the ability to pay that off sooner and not feeling like they were in debt for the first 10 years in their career, for instance. So the disciplines that pay more often look more attractive when someone has a huge amount of debt.
But that's a realistic concern. I mean, who wants to have $300,000 worth of debt starting off in your career and maybe your family and whatever? I mean, that's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. So, and I just looked this up. So a quick Google search, because I know that Rhode Island has a primary care loan forgiveness program.
Really?
So, yes. And I looked, and it appears, I don't know if this is totally factual, but of all of our states, I counted about 40 might have had various ways that they provide loan forgiveness to those entering the discipline of primary care. The issue is that in many of those states, it does depend on the location of your practice. There are going to be primary care shortage areas, and those loans will usually pay for those doing primary care in a primary care shortage area.
Okay.
There are actually many in our own community. That does help. That is,
yeah,
trying to get people to enter primary care knowing that they have at least part of their debt will be forgiven. So I think that's one factor that causes students to consider other disciplines. I think another factor that considers it is, again, depends on your location about whether or not primary care providers are seen as equal to those that do subspecialty medicine, and that can definitely impact a student and or a resident's choice of their discipline.
How would you say in Rhode Island the field is valued or not valued?
So I think overall, in general, it's quite valued in Rhode Island because I think the medical school values it. See, again, I think it's all the culture. So the medical school values it. And certainly, I believe the variety of residency programs. So we have, I think now three. I think we went from 4 to 3 residency programs in our state.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that certainly I can speak for our own. Again, primary care is the new black. So to us, we try to create a culture where we expose people to all aspects of general internal medicine, tell them what they want to do with their lives is incredibly valuable, and we try to support a culture of that.
Do we have enough PCPs in Rhode Island?
No. Anybody in from my graduating 10 that wants to stay would, in general, be very welcome to stay. So this year we have 2 out of the 10 graduates are staying here locally, which is fabulous. There are many other practices that also could use our graduates all across the state. So I'm always trying to tell people, look around, compare and contrast, and see if you want to stay with us versus go to another practice.